Counsel.
May it please the court. Brian Matsui on behalf of Plaintiff Elizabeth Colton. I would like to primarily focus my argument this morning on two issues, the first being the intersection between the ADEA and the mandatory retirement provision, and the second being what is required for a plaintiff, a federal employee plaintiff, to set forth proper notice under Section 633A, subsection D. And to the extent the court has any questions, I would, of course, be happy to address the equal protection argument or to the extent there's time permitting. First, with respect to the intersection between the ADEA and the mandatory retirement provision, we think that the statutory language of Section 4052 is very clear on its face. It allows only a narrow exception to the ADEA. It just sets forth one type of adverse employment action that the State Department can affect on a Foreign Service officer, and that's at the age of 65, the State Department shall retire that Foreign Service officer.
What do you make of the provision of the statute 3926 that says the Secretary may prescribe such regulations as the Secretary deems appropriate to carry out functions under this chapter? That would seem to suggest that in implementing the age 65 rule, the Secretary has some discretion, bounded by reasonableness, appropriateness, to enact regulations to carry that out.
We would believe that primarily relates to the waiver provision, because Congress, when it raised the age from 60 to 65, it undertook the view that we still would say wouldn't satisfy rational basis, but it took the view that Foreign Service officers are more capable of serving after the age of 65. And so with respect to the waiver provision, the Secretary obviously would need to have some sort of procedures in place to make exceptions above the age of 65 when they're going to, within the public interest, provide those additional extensions.
Well, in its phrasing, though, it's not so limited, correct?
It may not be, but that's not a position that the government has asserted.
It's under this chapter, which includes the age 65 rule.
That's correct, but the government hasn't sort of argued for any sort of deference with respect to regulations here before the court. What it basically is arguing that it has the latitude to set forth certain requirements.
I think the two things you just said are close to the same thing, that it has some latitude to adopt regulations to implement the age 65 rule.
We would say that primarily, though, relates to with respect to the waiver provision.
I understand you say that, but why should we say that?
Well, because it would violate the plain language of the statute to allow.
What plain language would that violate?
Well, I think that if we look at the two provisions as they intersect, I think that that if we look at Section 4052, the only adverse employment action it allows is to retire somebody at the age of 65.
Right, but under your theory, this is what bothers me about your argument. Under your theory, the State Department would have no way to enforce that with respect to anybody within a few months of retirement. I mean, somebody who's going to retire, say, in a month, if you're right, the State Department couldn't require them to retire at age 65.
I don't
see how you get. I mean, even if you're right that McDonnell Douglas applies, it seems to me that you would lose under that standard also.
We wouldn't think so, Your Honor, because in that situation,
you see my point? How could this Strawberry has ruled? We've ruled that the Secretary can enforce its mandatory requirement, right? Mandatory retirement age 65. Correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, under your theory, the Secretary couldn't do that for anybody who wanted a tour of duty within 2 years of retirement.
That's not true, Your Honor.
How could they
could
do it?
They could give somebody like our plaintiff, who's age 63, or they could give them a waiver, or they could retire here mid-tour.
Part's what's bothering us.
Yeah, suppose someone came and said, I want a 2-year assignment and I'm 1 month from retirement.
I think that in that situation, the government could set forth and say, It's necessary for someone to serve the 2 years.
Suppose 6 months from retirement.
I think that the government could also set that forth. I think it becomes
what about 1 year from retirement?
I think it becomes a case-by-case analysis. And the problem.
How could we possibly distinguish those cases from each other?
But I think the problem.
What would be the principal basis for doing that?
I think it becomes a case-by-case analysis, Your Honor.
And I know you keep saying that, but I'm asking you, what would this? How would we distinguish between somebody who applied 6 months before retirement and a year and a half before retirement, other than the fact that the latter is a year longer than the former?
If I may, Your Honor, I think that part of it would be what the State Department does repeatedly when they have these tour duty assignments. If it could be shown, which we believe it could, that they frequently modify the amount of the tour duties.
You allege that?
Pardon?
You don't allege that in your complaint, do you?
We do. We allege that they should have modified it.
But they should have, but Strawberry says that that's not reviewable, correct?
But yes, Your Honor, in our Rule 56F motion, we also set forth that that would be something that we want discovery on, is the circumstances in which they have modified these tour duty assignments. And I think that that precisely gets into the McDonnell-Douglas framework, where if the government sets forth and says this is a non-age-related reason for taking this employment action, we would still be able to say...
You don't allege that this was a hard, what do they call it, hard-to-staff position?
A hardship post. Yes,
right.
Your
okay.
Honor.
And do you allege that the secretary does waive the tour of duty requirement?
In our complaint, we do set forth that they do modify the tour of duty assignments, and they should have with respect to her. And in our Rule 56,
on what ground? I see. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, and in our Rule 56F declaration, we set forth that we wanted discovery on that. And I think that that's important, because this issue was decided on a motion to dismiss, and so we're basically having to accept right now all the government's assertions that they will never modify these tour of duty requirements. That these tour of duty requirements are sort of infallible, without any evidence to back it up. And I think that that's what the problem is, because the plaintiff should have been permitted to show that there had been significant modifications of these tour duty assignments, and that was not actually the non-discriminatory reason in which she was denied the Algiers position. And I think that that would have made a significant difference with regard to being able to show that there was actually discrimination here. I think that If the plaintiff in this case was denied the position on the basis of her sex, the State Department still could not use the mandatory retirement provision as a basis to deny her the Algiers position. It would still go into the mandatory.
That's your argument for not simply applying Strawberry, right? And saying we should apply McDonnell Douglas, because that's what allows us, I assume your argument, to tease out whether what the state has done is in fact necessary, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's your argument, okay. But there's no evidence, you know, there's no allegation here that this was done on the basis of gender.
Certainly, but we're not. Right. I'm making that by analogy. I think
that's your argument for why we should do McDonnell Douglas.
Right, with regard to age.
But what about this case?
And with regard to age, there's nothing in Section 4052 that says that the State Department can actually impose age-based requirements other than retiring the Foreign Service officer.
Back to the regulations provision, mm-hmm. which seems to suggest, I think if state had a five-year rule or something, you could say it's outside the bounds of what's appropriate and reasonable to implement the age 65 rule. But I see this case as the structure of the statute is somewhat straightforward, in the sense that you have this rule and then you have a delegation to the secretary or an authorization to adopt appropriate regulations, and this seems a standard rule. You have to serve 2 years for these tours of duty, and so therefore, if you're over 63, if you pass your 63rd birthday, you're not going to be able to do this kind of tour. You don't get fired. You don't get your pay reduced, obviously, but this specific.
But that would seem to go against what the judgment of Congress was when it raised the age from 60 to 65, because Congress determined.
Well, when they raised it from 60, when it was 60, you were fired when you were 60 or terminated.
That's correct, but what
now
Congress
you can't, and now you can't be until you're 65. So there's five additional years of pay guaranteed.
And what Congress,
that's a big deal.
Yes, but what Congress determined was that Foreign Service officers were capable of serving abroad, and that's what the plaintiff
must have determined that they were less capable at age 65. I mean, the 65 rule is here. Congress adopted it, right?
I'm sorry.
Congress adopted 65.
It did adopt 65, yes.
And this is a two-year assignment, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And your client was within 2 years of being 65, right?
Yes, Your Honor. But the point is, Your Honor, that they can modify the tours of duties in these situations. We just don't believe
they've
that
chosen,
you can...
They've chosen not to. And Strawberry says that's not a reviewable question.
But Strawberry says that the issue in Strawberry was far more narrow than the issue in this case. The issue in Strawberry was whether or not the person could actually be retired.
Right, but wasn't there an argument that it should have been waived at the time?
But the court said
that's not reviewable.
The court did not address that. I didn't read Strawberry to address that question. I read Strawberry as addressing two points. The first of which was whether or not Mr. Strawberry even fell within the mandatory retirement provision. And the second was whether or not he could then be retired at the age of 65. It didn't address any sort of other adverse employment actions that could occur before the age of 65, which is the issue that's before this court right now.
Well, we then write back to where Judge Tatel took you a while ago. Suppose she's 1 month from retirement and she asked for the 2 year assignment.
I would suggest that in that situation it probably would be a very strong non-discriminatory reason.
What power would they have at 1 month from retirement that they did not have at a year and a half from retirement?
Well, I would say that
whence comes the Secretary's power to act on the one but not the other?
It would come by the fact that it would be a non-discriminatory reason, and we would not be able to show that there is evidence that they had modified these tours of assignments. I think that it would
Why
be far
is it different at 1 month than at 9 months, 11 months, 15 months, or 18 months?
I think with discovery it would be far harder for us to show that there was a discriminatory, there was a pretext at 1 month. I think it would be very difficult.
Well, you're jumping the shark here. You're getting that there having to be a pretext. They don't need the pretext argument if they have the authority to accommodate the 65 retirement by not giving two-year assignments to persons who have less than 2 years to go before 65. Why do we have to get the pretext?
I think that, Your Honor, that would be because that is a far more broad repeal of the ADEA than is contemplated by Congress in Section 405.2. And so that would basically allow the Secretary.
I'm going to challenge your word repeal there. I mean, there's still a lot of protections for people until age 65. This is one aspect of it. But again, you retain your pay, you retain your job. There's one specific assignment that you can't do because of a rule that applies generally, which is you have to be able to do 2 years.
But Congress didn't make the determination that you could not serve abroad at the age of 63. It made the determination that you can no longer be employed at the age of 65. And what the State Department's rule, when it imposes these rigid
then you're
requirements...
you're back to the State Department. The Secretary selected 2 years as the time before age 65. You agree that 1 month wouldn't work. So we're left second-guessing the Secretary and saying, well, 2 years is not okay, but 12 months would be. And
I think it's hard to show what the actual – I think it would be hard for us to show that 1 month – and again, I understood Chief Judge Sentel's point – but it would be harder for us to show that a 1 month requirement, that only being able to serve 1 month would sort of
– How do we know better than the State Department?
Well, I think that the ordinary
– 2 years for tours of duty abroad.
I think that the ordinary functioning of the McDonnell Douglas framework would allow us to answer that. The government could set forth that they want to have a two-year assignment. We would be able to show whether or not that's actually been the case or not. If I could just briefly turn to this Section 633A provision, I think that with respect to our retaliation claims, in the amended notice, we set forth all the allegations that would list forward the allegations that set forth our retaliation claim. And so we think that that's all reasonably related and would arise out of an allegation that's all like and reasonably related and would grow out of those allegations, all the other aspects of our retaliation claim.
It wasn't a specific retaliation claim raised.
We didn't say the word retaliation, but we set forth all the allegations that would basically satisfy that requirement, and so we would think that would be sufficient. I see I have just 30 seconds remaining, if I could reserve that.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll hear from the appellee.
May it please the Court, Charles Scarborough for the State Department. The district court here correctly held that plaintiff's ADA challenge to the mandatory retirement age Congress established for foreign service officers is foreclosed by this court's decision in Strawberry. Now, Strawberry upheld, as the court has discussed, the mandatory retirement provision against an ADA challenge and said that the State Department can enforce
it. Strawberry didn't consider this issue.
Right.
Well, this is the way that the plaintiff tries to get around the binding precedent that is Strawberry. Strawberry says the State Department can enforce the mandatory retirement provision, and that has to be, that holding and the provision itself has to be given some meaning. It can't be construed in such a limited way that it drains it of all meaning. And the normal course of State Department operations, as reflected in their standard operating procedures, is that you send people out on tours of duties 1, 2, 3 year times, depending upon the post. And the State Department has promulgated a rule in this context, it's at JA 122, that says you can't go out if you're going to hit your mandatory retirement age. You can't go out, if you're going to hit that, unless it's
The Secretary has the authority to waive that, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The Secretary has the authority to waive that. It has authority extend the mandatory retirement age. Right. That's part of the statute.
Right. Well, suppose the evidence showed that the Secretary often does waive it for some people, but not others.
That would be a very different case from the one
that exactly why Strawberry doesn't control this case? Why plaintiff is right that we need to apply McDonnell Douglas to test this?
You
may still win in this case, but isn't that exactly why? I mean, suppose the evidence did in fact show that a third of these were waived.
Judge Taylor, you're positing a hypothetical case that plaintiff has not brought and has not pled.
I was simply probing your argument that this case is controlled by Strawberry.
Well, the reason why we say it's controlled by Strawberry is we're taking the allegations in the complaint, just as the district court did. And the allegations in the complaint,
if we rule that Strawberry controls this case, that is, that not only does it decide the issue before it, but also this issue, then in the next case, if there is a case where someone makes the allegation that these tour of duty requirements have been waived, then that decision will control that result, and that would be wrong, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure. We're positing a lot of hypotheticals. I'm not sure I'm following. If a plaintiff were to come and say, I don't think the State Department, and the court discussed this with opposing counsel, I don't think the State Department was really in trying to enforce the mandatory retirement provision. That's bunk. That's just not true. I think it's because I'm a woman or because I'm black. That would be a very different type of case.
Suppose,
that would be a McDonnell Douglas case.
Suppose just because there are some waivers granted, and they would argue, well, that shows that this isn't, quote, necessary. Then wouldn't we resolve that through McDonnell Douglas? You might still win. In fact, you might easily win in this case, given the allegations, if we applied McDonnell Douglas. But I guess I haven't seen why Strawberry should resolve all these. I mean, suppose, for example, suppose the record shows that for, people in their 30s and 40s, the tour of duty requirements are routinely waived.
I understand that, Your Honor, but again, I'm addressing what the plaintiff has pled in this case.
Yeah, I know.
The plaintiff has pled in this case.
I'll try once more. I'm simply trying to tease out your argument that the case is controlled by Strawberry. And hypotheticals are called hypotheticals because they're different from the case we have.
I understand.
Right? So I'm asking you how we would resolve a case where someone alleges that the tour duty requirement is routinely waived.
I think that might be a case that would be allowed to go forward. And so
you mean we would apply McDonnell Douglas to that?
I think so, yes. We're not trying to foreclose the application of McDonnell Douglas in an appropriate case where it was a charade, where the State Department was not really trying to implement and enforce the mandatory age requirement and was instead trying to, again, get at people because of their gender or because of their race or for some other prohibited reason. We're not in any way trying to foreclose that.
What would be, and again, this is another hypothetical, what would be the government's objection to a ruling that, A, this is not controlled by Strawberry, B, it's controlled by McDonnell Douglas, but given the allegations in this case, the plaintiff loses because she's not qualified for the position.
I think that would be a perfectly fine disposition of this case, Your Honor. And if I could return again to sort of the absurd results, the need for construing the age, mandatory retirement age, to give it some meaning. In this case, just to sort of put flesh on the bones of this particular case, plaintiff was looking for a two-year assignment to Algiers that would have taken her 7 to 8 months beyond her normal mandatory retirement provision. And the whole thrust of her complaint, and certainly of her notices of intent to sue, which I urge the court to look at, they're very, very brief, is that the State Department denied requests for extensions of the age requirement, and there's no allegation they did that for any other reason other than to enforce the age requirement. That's what this case is all about. And so, Judge Tate, I'm sorry for resisting your hypothetical. You were trying, obviously, to test the limits of, you know, what we want from this court. We want the court.
Well, no, I was actually testing the limits of Strawberry.
Well, okay. Fair enough.
I've thought 3926 was highly significant to this case. It's cited in your brief, but not heavily relied on. Am I overreading 3926?
I don't think you're overreading it, Your Honor. I just think that no one has really challenged the authority to promulgate the standard operating procedure that we rely on here. And, I mean, we do cite it, as you point out, at page 16 of our brief. I think it's part – this is very complicated stuff. Sending Foreign Service officers out into the field is something where the Secretary is delegated broad discretion to make orderly decisions, because you have to train people up. And once someone gets out in the field, recalling them imposes costs and, you know, disruptions and so on and so forth. And that's why the Secretary has promulgated the rule that if you're going to hit mandatory retirement during your tour, you shouldn't be allowed to go in the first place.
It's appropriate for us to ask whether the regulation is appropriate under the statutory test. Isn't that the test?
It's appropriate for you to ask whether it's appropriate? I don't think so.
I used the word appropriate twice, but the statute says as the Secretary deems appropriate. If there were something that we thought was inappropriate, we could say that kind of regulation did not carry out the functions of the chapter.
I suppose if there was a direct challenge to that particular regulation, again, that is absent from this case, I believe, too. But again, I thought that was this case. Well, I think it would be, if there were a review of that, I think it would be extraordinarily deferential review of the judgment of the Secretary. Yes, Your Honor.
Suggested by the word.
Yes, Your Honor.
As the Secretary deems
appropriate. I'm not resisting any judicial review.
That would have been a very good idea to have set forth the words of the statute in your brief, either in quoting it in the body or putting statutory appendix in the brief.
Well, the plaintiff.
This really would help you.
Well, the plaintiff cited the pertinent provisions in our view. The
I don't think they put them in their statutory appendix. And do you really want us to have to pick up the other side's brief when we're looking for?
Well, no, Your Honor.
We're reading your brief. Would you like us to interrupt our train of thought and pick up theirs? Or?
No, Your Honor. And I apologize for doing that. And I'll take the message back to our office that even when the plaintiff has put in the relevant statutory provisions, we should also put in the
right. And that one's not in their brief.
That one's not
that
in
that particular one, but we do cite it, Your Honor.
They're ahead of you. They've got a statutory appendix, but it doesn't have that one in it. And I don't blame them, because it wouldn't have helped them any.
I understand, Your Honor. I don't think we're precluded from relying upon the helpful statutory
language.
You cited it, yeah.
We did cite.
If I could turn very briefly to the exhaustion, and I want to make the point that the limits of what we are claiming in this case that Strawberry precludes are illustrated by the fact that we have a separate set of reasons for getting rid of the non-promotion in October 2009 and the retaliation claims. We're not claiming that these are actions that, you know, the ADA doesn't apply to by virtue of the application of the mandatory retirement provision. And that illustrates it is a limiting principle built into this case that shows that we're not trying to sort of say, well, we can do anything we want if someone's approaching mandatory retirement. So with respect to these other two acts, the non-promotion and the retaliation, with the non-promotion, as the district court recognized, that was something that occurred even after she filed the notices of intent to sue in January and April of 2009. That's not anywhere. And so that clearly doesn't satisfy the statutory prerequisites to filing an ADA claim. And with respect to retaliation, opposing counsel said sort of the essence is in there. It's not in there. In no way do the notices of intent to sue reflect any notion of retaliation or protected activity or anything. Instead, what they say, as the complaint says throughout, is that I was denied these opportunities because I was reaching my mandatory retirement age, because basically you were trying to enforce that statutory provision against me, and I don't think you can do anything to me until the date that I actually reach my mandatory retirement. That's the legal question the plaintiff has teed up in this case, and that's the question that we think Strawberry has already answered. And to the extent Strawberry has not answered it, we urge the court to answer that and say that that provision must be given some effect and not construed in such a narrow way as to make it essentially meaningless. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll stand down.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The appellant had used up their time. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal. Oh, you had 30 seconds left anyway. Give them a total of 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's very generous. I just really want to make 2 points, and I'll start first with the exhaustion point. The first is at JA 85, where we set forth in our amended notice the various allegations. We set forth all sort of the adverse employment actions that Elizabeth Colton, Ms. Colton, suffered as a result of the retaliation, and we set forth that, because of her inability to obtain further assignments, she's not getting the necessary experience that will help her increase her grade. And so this is precisely the type of allegations that are set forth in the notice where you could say that the allegations in the complaint are like and reasonably related to those that would be growing out of the allegations in the notice. And so we would say that those are entirely exhausted. Second, with just respect to the burden shifting and what's in our complaint, I think that we should take a look at how the McDonnell-Douglas framework works, where we would first set forth our prima facie case, and then the government would set forth its non-discriminatory reason for doing the adverse.
The rule in the standard operating procedures is the reason that it has not allowed this in this case.
Right, but what I'm saying is that it...
Can I ask a question? Are you challenging the two-year requirement, or are you saying that the two-year requirement has been applied by the State Department in a way that's been riddled with exceptions, and it is arbitrary not to find the plaintiff within one of those exceptions in this case?
We would be challenging both, Your Honor. To the extent that there would be a blanket rule, we would say that that would not be permissible under the ADEA. But certainly, because it has been applied in a manner in which there are tons of exceptions, it would not be appropriate to resolve this case on a motion to dismiss. And we would suggest that resolving that issue on the McDonnell-Douglas framework would be precisely the type of thing that should be done after evidence and isn't something that necessarily has to follow from an allegation in the complaint.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted.